Blog Talk Radio.
Hi everybody, welcome to another episode of the Neil and Kristen Baker Psychic Hour. Okay, so call the number 914-338-0164. We'd like you to give us a call so we can help you with your lives. Press 1 if you'd like to speak with us again. That call-in number is 914-338-0164. And of course, as always, we invite our callers and listeners to join us on Facebook and Twitter. Those accounts are linked on our Blog Talk Radio profile. And I believe that I've posted the show already to the page, but I'm going to actually share it to our other pages. So, I had some thoughts, but I don't remember what they are over the weekend about what, you know, what I wanted to talk about on the show, but I should have jotted them down because they're escaping me right now.
Well, once you call it, you can jump into it. You know, we talk about social distancing now, and there's a reason for that. Because of virus and germs and how we spread the virus. And we've moved it to like the max is like 6 feet. You have to at least stay 6 feet away, if not more. Because they probably did tests and see how far particles go when you speak or sneeze or something. Actually, it might go further, but they might dissipate. And so they have a reasonable distance. I mean, they have to come up with something, so they can't say 10 feet apart, we wouldn't be able to function. So, and then we have these masks and these screens and everything to protect ourselves in addition to the distance.
Which I saw another person with a face shield, you know, those sheer plastic face shields. And it's kind of funny the first time I saw it, but actually it's probably much more comfortable for breathing, number one, and two, it's probably a lot healthier than the masks, because what's happening now is that people are getting lung infections because of breathing their own toxic carbon dioxide. That can be more dangerous than the virus. And we have to remember that, you know, this is a 98% survivable virus. That's, you know, which is equivalent to influenza. So separate issue, but I almost think it would be more comfortable to wear one of those face shields, and then you're still following the proper protocol that businesses asking.
It would go against the shield itself, and that could easily be wiped and disinfected and used over and over again. A lot of welders and people who work with molten metals and stuff, or sparks, wear those masks, and basically they do protect. I mean, I guess they're actually a particle or a germ or the virus can go underneath the mask and float up, but that's not as
right.
It'd have to get to your chin and then.
But what the CDC is saying, and people aren't, this is really not in the mainstream media, is that the virus really doesn't live on surfaces. So there's things that are being released that are not being made public, and this mentality of fear go ahead.
Well, I mean, the reason I brought it up is because we're talking now deliberately about social distancing and because of the virus and everything. On our show, I want to emphasize what it is about the energy fields around us,
which are unseen. They're not physical. So
they're unseen. But we do have an etheric body, and that energy, that puts out an energy that is around our bodies constantly. It does sort of have a magnetic belt or a sort of a gravitational field around it. So the old test is when you put your hands, palms facing one another with about a 2 or 2 inches apart, you can feel a sort of force between the palms of your hand that would feel like you're almost touching an invisible rubber ball. It's a very sensitive operation, and some people feel it immediately. Some people have to kind of work with it. Now, some of it could be air currents, because as you're trying to formulate this energy field and you're moving your hands back and forth slightly, you can feel a little bit of air current phenomena there. But there is specifically an energy field we put out, not only from our bodies. Our bodies are the, one of the last transmitters of it, but it's originating from our etheric body. So that produces the halo around us and the aura around us. And this energy is not just filled with the contents of our body functions, our body, our physical body. It's filled with karma. It's filled with the content of our soul. It's filled with our thoughts. It's got all of that chemistry in it. And it's emanating from our bodies and producing a shield around us. This is also typical of, you know, dogs that smell us and get a scent. We build a shield around us. I had a client years ago I saw her shield was, through the third eye, her shield was
weak,
really weird.
Oh, really?
Her shield was really weird as a third eye.
Mm-hmm. I saw.
We have birds that come in.
Listen to this.
Thank God we got somebody. Anyways, the idea that I saw her energy, and the way that I saw it, I said, "You're going to get attacked. You're going to get attacked by maybe incidentally by birds, crows, hawks," and sure enough, she not only explained that that had been happening, but it was continuing to happen. Now, animals can see those energy fields. There was just a recent article that a dog can pick up whether you're an evil person or not.
Yeah, I saw that.
I don't know. I've had plenty of
dogs that were not nice, right?
You know, and I'm a vegetarian, so who knows what that story is all about. But there's some sense to it that animals pick up a scent, they pick up an energy. Well, we pick up energies too, and wild animals will pick it up too. And so if this energy field is around us, and this is almost a scientific fact that we do have an energy field around us, well, then what is the content of it?
Well, then, and sorry to interject here, but the content of that energy field is always changing. It's, of course, holding karma from the soul and content from the soul, but because it's holding the thought patterns and actions that we do on a day-to-day basis, then it is in constant flux.
It is. It is in constant flux. You know, just as when we get bashful, we turn red, and when we get angry, maybe we sweat or we grimace, The energy field is constantly vibrating. It's like, you know, in a solid object, there are atoms and molecules and things like this that are constantly in rapid motion. Nothing is really at a standstill in life. And we're even talking about inanimate
objects.
Everything is in constant motion. So when we put out an energy, that may be in combination with what's already established, because our souls come into our bodies and the story is somewhat fixed. Our souls have a history. That history is filled with karma and energy, and that gets planted into the body. So now the body is not only holding what the brain, the lungs, the intestines, and all that, but the body is now holding the history of everything that the soul has brought to that structure,
to the specific lifetime. So the body itself is impacted by all of this content.
So we are filled.
Body, mind, emotions.
You know, I was just reading this Dennis DeMenace cartoon, and Dennis DeMenace says to Mr. Wilson, you know, when I think about the good old days, it's hard not to forget because it was only a few weeks ago. Meaning Mr. Wilson, the neighbor, the grumpy neighbor, has a whole history behind him. Well, we tend to think when we're born, he's fresh, like Skinner, blank, the psychologist. We have these blank slates that were just blank, and we're ready to get imprinted, and we're ready to learn. Well, you know, we can't remove instinct from our vocabulary because instinct is a genetic code, and we know from the animal kingdom that instinct plays a part. And instinct plays a part partially to human beings. The higher and the more intelligent you are, the less instinct becomes a factor and more learning becomes an issue and less instinct. But that's the makeup of the DNA too. That's a makeup of the organism itself, whether it's going to be distinctly instinct coming from patterns of genetic history as opposed to what is learned. And even the most primitive creatures have to learn because they'll learn that certain flowers are noxious or certain insects, you don't eat them. Sometimes it's through learning, even with the lower animals, that instinct doesn't always play a part.
But getting into the idea of children and how they're raised, so going through the instinctual phases and then into a learning how to speak, etc. Parts of children's personalities are revealed that don't seem to come from learning. So that's where past life content comes in.
Yeah,
because they start to, I mean, there are things that parents will say, my child, I don't know why they, you know, gravitate towards, I don't know, music, or they have this natural ability that isn't learned. It seems to be within their
right. You know, in very simplistic terms, the movie Star Wars was not the first. It was the first movie that came out, but it wasn't in sequence the first in history of the whole era of the filmmaking. It wasn't the first movie. There were other movies that came that started before Star Wars, when Luke Skywalker was younger and things like this. But when you're looking at one movie in a series of movies, you're already thinking, if you have a history of the movies that you're looking at that are in serial context, that there are other episodes. There's other episodes. When I was a kid, my brother and I would go to what was called kiddie matinees. So you saw two movies.
Someone else who got attacked by a bird, by the way.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that. Mockingbirds, remember, on his mail route?
Yeah. So you'd see two movies, and in between you'd see a cartoon and a serial. And the serial, Flash Gordon or The Shadow or whatever it was, you know, the Amazon Queen, whatever the serial was, we would always see like episode 16. And we never, they just keep showing episode 16, maybe episode 8. If you got lucky and you saw another episode, you never saw anything in sequence. You just see one episode and then the cartoon would come on. Sometimes on Turner Classic Movies, they'll show an episode like that. And you just, it's like, well, what's the rest of it? Well, we are episodes. We're one episode. And when we start our lives, there's already drama. And we say we don't pick our parents, or we do pick our parents, but then who did, if we pick our parents, how do our parents pick us? You know, yeah. It goes entwined and complicated. But it all comes from a sequence of other episodes. And all these episodes are what? Positioned and stationed and existing in our soul, which is constantly pumping out energy from within our bodies and putting that out as a shield of energy. This is how we find coincidences. This is how we meet people. This is how we get karma. This is how we get in accidents. This is how we fall in love. The content of it is not merely the first episode we see, which is our body. The content of everything we're doing comes from episodes before we got here.
Right, but I mean, it's worth mentioning that we can fall in love with someone we've never had a past life with before, or we can encounter people we were just talking about in the last show. There are new people.
We've termed that as the creative, the new spontaneous creative,
you know,
existence, the transcendent existence.
Some people believe that twin souls are on the planet for the first time together in their last incarnation, which is not true, but I thought I'd mention that.
Yeah. The twin soul thing is a whole different.
But yeah, we're not on that subject.
It's a loose term that people use,
right,
because they believe in their heart, mind, body, and soul that they have twin souls. And twin souls, whose relationships can resemble a twin soul connection. And to that extent, it can be a twin soul connection. But the true dynamic of a twin soul connection is something that we all aren't going to discuss.
We're not going to discuss today.
It's a different concept. Much deeper.
Right, but just to add on to that before we move on, twin souls do have karma together. They don't. Twin souls.
Yeah.
Have karma. They have past lives.
They know each other
for
sure. And
there's
a deep history in the astral field. The astral field's a whole different concept, because the astral field is that world, that dimension, that environment and region where there is no physical body sensation. There's nothing in the body that exists there. So everything that our body demands, everything that our body expresses, all of our bodily needs do not exist in the astral realm. The astral realm is stripped entirely of the body. We can't even enter the astral realm in our bodies. We have to astral project.
Or, yeah, right. So through sleep dreaming. We were just talking about this in the book that we're writing about the fact that, you know, you can't bring ego into the astral realm because it doesn't exist. You can't. And the reason people get brought back to their body is because there's too much body, you know, bodily needs.
That's why they call it astral projection, not body projection. You're not taking your body anywhere. You're using the silver cord to release your astral body, your etheric body, and through that cord it channels out into the astral realm, and then you go deeper and deeper and deeper, like in the ocean. You go deeper and deeper and deeper into the astral realm, forever attached through this quote umbilical cord, this silver cord, to the body. And any entity that is in the astral realm encountering you knows that you, because of that cord, that you are still a living human being, not just an astral, in and of itself, an astral body. It's still attached to the astral realm. But again, we're talking about distancing, how we distance ourselves from our immediate body, and then how we have, in terms of our immediate body, how we have a sort of distance from the immediate body to the etheric realm, where our soul is putting out and transmitting and emitting this energy that constantly goes out filled with content. Very, very sensitive, gifted psychics can wave their hand 3 inches above a person's skin and read them, give them a whole read. With their third eye, they can open it up and see energies floating around the person within a foot of their life, things floating around them. You know, I remember this famous drawing of Mark Twain, showed his head, and circling around what you'd call his aura was all the characters he's ever created. Tom Sawyer, Huckleberry Finn, he was on a book. But it was so poignant and real, because that's what happens. We have to consider that thought form along with energy, along with karma, along with past lives, is something that has a certain distance from our immediate body, and it's put out as such. So, so when we talk about the immediacy of social distancing, I'm forever considering the idea that that's always been a consideration of mine, because.
But social distancing has been a consideration of yours?
Yeah. Because the idea, when I'm looking at people's energy fields, yuck.
Yeah.
I don't want to get too close. I mean, I'm a strict vegetarian. So meat eaters, I don't, you know, if I have to get close.
It's ironic because you're, you know, given the fact that our role is to help people, but you're talking about how you're disgusted by getting close to
sometimes
people.
Sometimes I am
it's
disgusted.
Like, no, I mean, I am too. I get it. But it's
just
funny.
But, you know, I mean, you know, the giraffes and the elephants, you know, all the plant eaters, all the omnivores, they all congregate together. They're hanging out. Tiger comes around and the giraffe doesn't go up to the tiger. Hey, how you doing?
Right.
You know, there's a recognition. When you're a meat eater, as opposed to a vegetarian or a plant eater, there's a certain recognition. There's a certain element of knowing what is threatening and what isn't. And no, it isn't to say that you know, have encountered meat eaters and they're
right,
friends.
And that they're not threatening. I mean, you know, meat eaters
no,
aren't necessarily
no,
threatening
I don't mean
to
that.
One's survival.
I'm going deeper to a more subtle definition.
Yeah.
In terms of knowing what I would find disgusting and seeing that energy, I put up certain precautions for myself just because it's, you know, I'm looking at somebody who eats animals. I could never eat an animal. The reason I can't eat an animal is because I've looked at animals and creatures and insects' energy fields and studied them all my life and have talked to them. And sure enough, I even know from carnivores, because I've encountered them in my hikes and stuff, that when they see me, and I have this ability to communicate with them. I've even had grizzly bears just stand on their hind legs and wave at me like they're Grizzly Adam bear and walk away. Because there's a certain element of energy, I believe, that we all see, even from a distance.
Well, yeah, it's interesting, too. Just the other day, 2 days ago, I had a dragonfly come right up to me. He was flying around in the yard, and the dragonfly came right up to me, to my mid-torso, flew up to my head, around my head, and then, you know, but it was like a greeting.
Yeah.
And I really do believe that animals and insects can perceive your energy field when you're vibration.
We had an episode where Chris and I were talking. We were talking to a dragonfly. He perched himself on a structure, and he was talking to us. He was just talking away and talking away. Suddenly, he leaves. He catches an insect, and he's eating it. He comes back. And while he's chewing on it, he continues on with
to his narrate
story. So anyway, you know, he's chewing away. You know, and I tell you, I really.
And that I want to add just real quick, that same dragonfly attacked someone yesterday.
Oh, yeah. That was
the same dragonfly. Yeah.
And dragonflies are fascinating creatures. They're carnivores. They eat but they're still fascinating, fascinating creatures.
They are. And we have a caller. Let's bring a caller on before they, the person departs. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks. How are you? What's your name?
I was calling. I had a question. I think I talked to you about a couple weeks ago.
I recognize the number, but...
I had a question because we were talking about the job situation and how everything's good, and you're going to ask me if I was going to stay at the job because everything is opening up for me. And we now, for the department that I work for, they're anticipating cuts. Do you see my office at all being part of the cuts? Because it's like 12% across the board.
What's your name?
Oh, it's Felicia James. I'm sorry.
Oh, you don't need to give the last name, though. It's okay. Is it F-E-M-I-C-I-A?
That's...
No.
It's F-I-S-H-A. F-I-L-I-S-H-A.
Okay. F-I-L-I-S-H-A.
She's April 25th, 69.
Yeah, 425-1969. You must have just called us because Neil's looking. Okay. And I don't know why I'm not finding you in mine, but that's okay. Oh, there you are. All right.
We take notes on, oftentimes we take notes on readings, and if they're available to us, we can see.
A lot of times I'll remember the content, actually, and I remember people's birthdays or names, but I didn't. I'm sorry, 6/11, 21. Okay, so, and you're...
Housing Homeless Assistant Director...
Yeah, now we remember.
Assistant Director, I got some notes here. You started school, okay. So medical, you were medical patient care, criminal justice, homeless assistant director, homeless, and you're wondering if you're going to get cut.
But I don't.
Yes.
You're in a position, though, that's, I mean, you're in a management position. You're not.
Correct.
Like a caseworker.
Yes. They're, in other words, they're saying it doesn't matter what position you're in technically, because the state has to cut and across the board. So
how long have you been in this job, Felicia?
I'll be in this role this month, a year.
A year?
Yes, this month.
In this role, but have you worked there for longer than a year?
Oh, yeah, I've been there about 2 years, two years, because I was at the other state job for 2 years. Yes, I've been there 2 years. It will be 3 years soon.
Okay. But it's 2 years, and you were at the other state job for 2 years, because I was saying 4 years. So that's the four that I was getting.
Why.
2 years and 2 years.
Yes, exactly.
And that's interestingly, in your month and day, four and two. But... So, I mean, on a level of logic, are there other people that have been there for a longer duration than you that are in similar positions?
Yes. Not in our office per se. We only have one person that's above me, which is the director. He's been there the longest. He's the Office of Housing and Homeless Service guru. So
when you talk about other offices, how do those offices function in their capacity? Are they for locations, specific locations in your county or city, or do they function?
If we function differently, we're functioning in one location downtown. And we're in one department, like mental health and substance abuse is a department. So we work with different areas. We have peer support. We have substance abuse. We have so many areas. And we're just in, that's offices, I should say. So peer support office. You have substance abuse office. You have our office. You have crisis office. You know, we broke up like that under one umbrella, mental health and substance abuse.
Well, have they've been cutting people around you? They've already let go, some people go?
Not yet. They're in the process of getting everything together. By the end of this month, they're going to let everyone know what happened.
Okay. Felicia, you have to understand something. My comment, at least, is not going to be predicated on sound
logic.
Prediction.
Oh.
I'm not giving you a sound prediction, but I don't think you're going to get
lose
cut.
Your job.
Now, let's say you do. Okay, I was wrong. I've been wrong before, but I've been right more than I've been wrong throughout my history. And I don't think you're going to get cut. You know, one, you're 51 years old. It's an odd time in your life to be making those kinds of drastic changes. It can happen, but it's not really clearly evident that anything's going to happen dramatically in that context. Two, you're in the homeless situation, which is an outstanding problem. At what city are you in?
I'm in Nashville.
Well, you know, here in California, L.A., it's a horrible situation. I don't know about Nashville.
Oh, yes.
Oh, okay.
And we do have, yes, we have our counties, our surrounding counties is bad.
Okay, it's a national problem. And, yes, we're going through several changes. And the structure of our society is drastically changing. But there's still an acute awareness that some things cannot vanish, and we have to start tackling things on a more of a social level. And that involves individuals. So when we look at this problem, which is a massive problem, homelessness, this is a concern for the nation. This is a major concern for our country. And you know, for them to cut your position, I don't see it. I get budgets and all that, and the crisis going on. But I don't think you're going to get cut. But remember, I'm not promising.
Yeah, and my vibe is initially that you, before we started talking, that you wouldn't be cut either. But of course, going through the, you know, the logic behind why you may or may not be cut is important in our conversation.
Correct.
How many people work under you?
I have two other staff under us. It's my director, then myself, then we just hired a program manager, one, and we have an admin, three. Actually, she's split between two departments or two offices.
Okay. And is this, so this homeless division, is it just your office in Nashville that deals with the homeless problem? Are you the only one?
We work with the housing part, so yes, we're the work with the housing part. We have housing with mental health illness. We have other offices that works with housing, but they might be with children. We're with adults, and we might have some children. So we're from 18 to 24, and then we have some that's like crisis. Crisis is across the board for everybody who works. Who's in a crisis, who might be homeless or things like that. But we're more of housing, permanent housing or transitional housing.
Yeah.
Felicia, you know, you have to look at this in terms of building blocks. If they take away your brick, if they remove you, how important a role do you play in terms of the structure of the whole homelessness and housing situation? If you're removed, what happens?
That's what I was looking at, because I was actually the director before I became a director. I was the admin three. So they had, before I became assistant director, they had the director doing all of the work, like for a director and an assistant director, but it was so overwhelming for him. So that's when I end up getting in this position.
They created a position
for
you.
No, actually, it was a position for assistant director. They just didn't fill it.
Oh.
They finally was in the process of filling this position.
But he was.
Okay,
and then you took it over.
Why would they take your?
Yes.
You know, logically speaking, why would they take your position away and come up with more problems than what they're trying to solve?
That's what I said. But with the state, I said the same thing. But with state, you know, they do things that. You'll be like, that didn't make sense. So
yeah, I don't think so. You know what? They, you know, every state is still concerned. We've got some major problems going on. And with
right.
our current awareness and what we've learned, you may say, you know, boy, they make errors, and I don't understand why they do things the way they do. But housing is
mm-hmm.
a major priority now. And homelessness is a major priority. And if they take away your position, they're expecting more problems. Because there's no
right.
who's going to solve it?
And
Superman?
I imagine that there are other departments within the state, because you're talking about a whole state bureaucracy.
Right.
So I imagine that there are other departments in the state that are more, you know, there are more people in those departments that they can cut because they don't need as many people in those specific departments. They're not as vital
right.
to this. They're not as vital to the survival of the state.
But also, you know, you're a master number one, and you're 51 years old, and your multiples of nine are evenly spread apart. There's no conflict in your karmic and your master number. They factor into one another. So to leave
mm-hmm.
50.
It doesn't make
sense.
So
in other
words,
you got there exactly. when you were 48.
Mm-hmm.
Which?
What did you say, I'm sorry?
48.
When did you start there? How old were you?
Oh, I was 49.
51, 40, because 2 years. So she was not
49.
On it, which is their first and last numbers, actually. 49.
Well,
49.
Well,
mm-hmm.
you did start there at an odd time.
But it's in her
you
code.
You did start there at an odd time. It's in your code. Yes, in your
she
first and
nine.
Last. You're right. That could work. That could work. Well, I don't think you're, you know, if we're wrong, we're wrong. We're doing the best we can. I don't feel you're going to be cut. If you are, okay, we made a mistake, but I don't, on the psychic vibe, I don't think so. But there's some,
okay.
There's some concern, but I don't think so. And if they're talking about these cuts, you look around your organization and decide what looks like an obvious cut. What, you know, what seems to be an excess. That's what they're going to look at first,
okay.
Not the main vein.
Okay. We talked about this with our director, and that's what we're leaning towards. And he said he don't see it, but you know, he don't see it. And I have an amazing leader. He is. I thank God almost every day I can that he is a great leader. He teaches. He takes his time because this is a new role for me, technically, because you really don't know this role. Actually, get used to a position until it takes about maybe even 2 years, a year to 2 years, when you finally start saying, okay, everything's clicking. So he's been very helpful to our team.
Well, if his knowledge and his experience is fitting what we're saying on a psychic level with some sense of logic, then that's a good sign.
Yeah, he's very good, yeah.
Okay, so let's assume you're going to stay. Let's put out energy that you'll stay based on a premonition that you will, not a prediction,
mm-hmm.
but a premonition, and
okay.
We'll go that route.
Okay, I will. I have been. I honestly have been, and I have prayed on it, and get to the universe, whatever happens, it goes, it's that way for a reason, and I deal with it as it comes, because there's nothing is not by accident. It meant to happen this way to guide me in another direction or to guide me to stay in the same direction, because, you know, I don't know if I remember telling you guys, I would start school July 1st with my management and leadership class. So
yeah.
That's helping me.
I remember that from our last conversation, we were saying probably at 54, there would be like, what is it, a 3-year program or something, 2 to 3 years?
Actually, it's an 18-month, yeah.
It's 18 months. But maybe you would be graduating to a new position because you have more, you know, because of your educational experience. What's interesting too, Felicia, is that your year, multiple of 54, which is when you're having your next big change. So if you multiply 6 and 9, you get 54. That's when you're going to have another big change. Maybe you'll be moving up in the job that you have in the state. What's your ultimate goal with the education?
My ultimate goal, I'm trying to decide on open up a place. It's the children and adults that need it. Like children, when they get out of school, they can have a place to come that they can do their homework. They can have something to eat on. And I have someone there to help them with their studies, like a mentor. And then also I'm thinking more of housing or building that just helps the community, like with mental health, how somebody come in who's a therapist and they have mental health issues. You can sit and talk to a therapist. I'm trying to figure out which way I'm going with this, or do I want to open up a facility that just have the supportive living individuals who are here on their own.
Yeah, now I remember. Now I remember.
Yeah.
The
well,
conversation.
Opening up a facility is filled with all kinds of complications. If that's going to make your life goal and that's what you're going to be doing, you got to get on it.
She's going to school.
Yeah.
In order to.
But in the meantime, the urgency of this, the powers that be above you that are trying to make these budget decisions are going to have to consider housing to be a major problem that has to be tackled, not ignored. So
okay.
I don't know. There may be other facets. If you're directly involved in housing and there's other facets like mental health or something, the city may say, look, we need housing is going to be more important. Let's get them off the streets. We'll worry about their minds later. Mm-hmm. You know, they may go that way if they're somewhat, you know, maybe insensitive to it and they have to make some hard decisions. I'm sure there's still human beings making decisions. These aren't monsters that are making these budget cuts. They have to consider the reality of where the money's going. But housing is a direct ground level problem.
Right.
And so
yeah.
Why would they eliminate that, Felicia? It's a ground level problem. The mental health is more up in the sphere somewhere. So I think you're in a position where you're probably, and the housing itself will increase a better sense of mental balance because you're not surviving on the streets.
Right. I agree.
Okay. So you're the experienced one. You're agreeing with us in terms of our logical stance, and we're moving forward into a psychic realm. And you, as a legitimate human being on the planet, also seem to allude to the universe and prayer and all this stuff. So we're all on the same page. So let's just put our heads together and say you're going to remain where you are and you're going to do dynamite work. Maybe you'll open up a center at some point.
Yes, that's the goal.
Okay.
Okay, Felicia. Well, hopefully you'll give us a call and let us know how things progress. I don't know when are they making the cuts?
They take it back to the governor, I think the end of this month, so we should know. They're going to take it back before that, but the end of this month, we should know. So, end of this month, they decide on which way to go. And we have a lot of older adults who've been at this current job for several years, and they're possibly close to retirement age, so they're going to give out like a stipend or what do you call that, a nice little package to retire early too. So they're looking into several things.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Well, you know, letters to the governor and a lot of effort to make him aware from everybody. I mean, go out and get signatures, you know, send it to the governor.
Okay.
Does that make sense? I don't know if that makes sense.
It does.
To people.
It It does.
I would get signatures. I'd get signatures from homeless. I would get signatures from everybody and mail that to him.
And I think, too, who helps us, we have another great assistant commissioner behind us. He's rooting for to keep our department, not just the office, our department, because it's very important that we just take less hits, cuts, or individuals have to lose their job than anything. Because
what you want to do is compose a letter that talks about why your department is so vital to the community and get signatures.
Get signatures. Go out in the streets and get signatures. I mean, let the governor see how many people are involved in this.
I'm writing notes, taking notes.
Okay. All right, Felicia.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, you're welcome. And hopefully Felicia will join us on our Facebook page. That's the Neil and Kristen Baker Psych Care. She can send us a friend request. And definitely let us know when you have some new information on this, okay?
I will do. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
You know, that's just it, too. We have our own inward social distancing, meaning that a lot of us have good intention, but we distance ourselves from implementing it. People who say they're going to do something, they don't do it. People who have dreams, they don't fulfill it. They don't even make an effort, but they keep their dreams intact. I mean, when you get into the concept of distancing, I think it opens up a big conversation that it's just not about social distancing because of a virus. A virus has to define now how we have to protect ourselves, but it also defines the intimacy of what's going on. You know, here we have this virus, and whether you believe what happened or not is not the issue. But here we have this virus where we're supposed to stay apart from one another. And here we have this police officer putting his knee into another human being without a mask on and killing him, literally killing him for 9 minutes while a human being is pleading for his life. You know, talk about social distancing. That's one of the most absurd images that our world is going to produce this century. A complete contradiction in terms. Talk about 6 feet apart. I mean,
then people are rioting. And they're not 6 feet apart at all. They're packed like sardines in the streets.
And this absurd cop who doesn't even wear a mask. We're supposed to be wearing masks. The virus doesn't hit the cop.
Well, I mean,
you know, and
he's
got his knee in this guy, and the guy he can't breathe. And the guy goes, wherever you're talking, you can breathe. Well, if you're talking and you can breathe, then you can also get the virus. I mean, the whole thing.
Well, I mean, obviously, if you're talking and struggling for breath, saying, I can't breathe, that's
the
right. I know you are, but I'm just saying.
But, you know, when we. What is wrong with our race? We are so mixed up, and we don't even know how to get to the soul because we're so filled with prejudice, bigotry, judgments, and we all think we're tucked away in our little secure worlds, especially when they're produced by separation.
Well, that's exactly it, because this. There are plenty of blacks, whites, Asians hurt, injured, same thing, or killed by cops that don't have this kind of publicity. And so what's happening now is there's an agenda. There is an agenda, and it's creating a huge division between whites and blacks. And, I just don't think that's healthy.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, this show has been on for 30 years, Cops. Now they want to take it off the air because of potential police brutality. But what are we, now there's censorship? what now, if there's a movie, are we supposed to shelf our movies that have police brutality?
And
anything with police brutality in literature, we're supposed to shelf?
And they're saying now, well, I did not read everything out there about why they're pulling cops, but people are arguing about it online, and supposedly it's, you know, because it's for the protection of police officers, and they don't want to expose them to, you know, I don't know. It's ridiculous. But a show like Cops, I don't know how reality based it really is. I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's set up
part. The issue is censorship.
But well, it is, but it's also the fact that a show that's filming police catching criminals is actually holding these police accountable, because, you know, if a camera's rolling, they're not going to be beating the shit out of suspects or killing them on camera.
Well,
so
there's
I mean,
difference between by tactical apprehension and using standards that are safe. That's one thing, and that's a police department needs to do to apprehend a criminal. Putting your knee on somebody until they're dead with two other cops standing guard is another issue. So it's not the issue isn't that cops, policemen have to, you know, apprehend through physical force a potential criminal or criminal at large or whatever. It's the idea that when you say Black Lives Matter, it's the idea that you don't kill a person when you're apprehending them. You know, if somebody's reaching for, oftentimes somebody's reaching for their gun that happens to be their wallet or there's nothing in
right,
a water bottle, and they kill them.
That just happened in one of the protests. It was a looter, I think. He had a hammer in his back pocket. The police thought he was had a gun, and they opened fire on him. He was kneeling with his back to the police officers, and
they
thought there was a gun, and they killed him.
I don't know.
But I mean, you know, this is a case that has not been, this was a Hispanic person that was killed. This is not generating, you know, a whole movement.
No.
So it's just, I mean, the hypocrisy and what sparks people to action. And what's behind that action is, you know, something to be examined, in my opinion.
Well, you know, now we have this new face of this victim, and it's everywhere. And it represents just not police brutality towards blacks, but it releases the whole history of slavery, of that their property, that we can do with them as they want. To me, it's as horrendous as, well, in my terms, as slaughtering pigs, because they're items. They're just commodities. I think all life has to be respected, but that's my world. It's never going to fit the whole world. But I think, you know, the energy that this goes along, whether it's Armenians or Jews or Catholics, whatever it is in terms of religion, in terms of race, in terms of creed, in terms of color, the idea is that all life matters. We have to separate Black Lives Matter because there's a crisis. There's a real crisis. It's born out of slavery. It's born out of pulling people out of their continent.
Right. And you know,
on slave ships to become property.
Yeah. And
it's a
know that the
crime.
CIA also put crack cocaine on the streets and infiltrated the black communities and maybe, you know, forced addiction on these people and the housing crisis.
Yeah.
We know that people have been put in certain conditions and unable to get housing. And so there's definitely discrimination on all these levels against individuals of color. So that's a reality.
These rude awakenings that are supposed to be transformed into enlightenment and change and transformation, it's all very good on paper. To implement it in action, I think we all have to, as human beings, get in touch with our soul and get beyond the issue of what divides us. Maybe if history produces some kind of change, we'll have a new cabinet in the White House, that will be based on unity again. It's not the first time that will have happened, but there's got to be, basically, when you have a wound, you need to heal. You don't need to cut it open more for the sake of power or control or insinuating that somebody who fell down and cracked their head on the sidewalk was exaggerating when a policeman pushed them. It's not the idea that we have lost concept of life. And when we see sheer brutality, we tend to excuse it with, in his terms, fake news. You know, the fake news of that we reduce a human life to a conspiracy, to a motive, I think is destroying what the value is, what human life is all about. The fact is, someone was pushed, their head hit the cement, there was blood. It's not a matter of who's
faking. Are you talking about
life.
The 70s?
I'm talking about this protester that was
the guy
recently.
In his 70s?
Yeah.
Yeah, which I mentioned on the
last
show.
Yeah. I'm referring to that. But
did Trump say he was exaggerating?
He said, it looks suspicious. It looked like he looked like the way he was pushed that his fall was really dramatic. And he thinks it looked a little fake to him. My God, what is wrong? This is the man that is the president who's insinuating that a human injury was set up so that he could continue his division and create a civil war in our country because he needs to stay in power. I don't know. I don't want to get on any soapbox.
Well, I mean,
but I feel that we're the issue that we're trying to attune to is the spirit of life, existence, and that's you don't start that off with division.
Division, exactly.
But nonetheless, it's a fight. It's a battle. There's massive demonstrations and movements in the streets now about unity.
Right.
Maybe
and,
this will
you know,
produce the
exactly, because the statements that we are one, obviously, we talk about the fact that, no, we aren't one because there's so much division and duality on the planet. But that's the aspiration, is to be in unity. And that's coming from the spirit realm, not
right.
The earth realm.
I think
unity and spirit.
I think it's unity and diversity. Unity in
diversity.
Diversity.
Well, it has to be unity and diversity on the planet.
Yeah.
Because it can't be unity in spirit until you're in the spirit
realm.
You
can't. Yeah, you can't.
And even in the astral realm, there's duality.
Right.
In the lower levels of the astral realm, there's duality. So
we need to celebrate our culture. I don't want the black culture to become the white culture, the white culture to become. I want to see the separations live and thrive so that there's an enrichment of diversity. And concept and customs and foods. I mean,
culture, art, music,
everything.
Yeah.
We have to celebrate that and discover that there's diversity, there's unity in diversity, that we're all still one with diversity, anyways.
Okay, well, yeah. It's a good thought to put out. And we will be putting out some more thought and energy on the next show, Friday at 9 a.m. Pacific, 12 p.m. Eastern. Hope you join us then. Bye-bye.